Happy summer, neighbor. The day this episode comes out is my kids' last day of school, and we are out for the summer, and we're going to burn all their schoolwork in a bonfire tonight. It's what we do, family tradition. I absolutely love summer. Summer is a time, you know, to connect with your family reunions, which is where I met today's guest. Actually, not really, but she did marry my second cousin. I've said it before, and I'll probably say it a bunch more times. Twins don't really run in my family, but I do have a really big family, so odds are some of us are going to have twins. Plus, I use fertility medicine, so that doesn't really count when you're talking about twins running in the family. But anyhow, Becca, my guest today, has seven kids. Her identical twin boys are in the middle. They are kids numbers 4 and 5. We talk about her precipitous labors, one of the reasons why I was so calm when I accidentally had twin A at home, advocating for your kids, and her take on matching clues and helping identical twins form separate identities. We are also joined by her one-year-old son and dog for part of the interview. So if your dog or son love this interview, I would appreciate you sharing it with a friend. Thanks. Hey, I'm Amber, mom to boy-girl twins plus three other girls. My oldest was in kindergarten when baby 5 came along. I have a lot of kids and a lot of practice parenting them. But when I have a question, I turn to an expert, another mom. I believe the best advice comes from moms in the trenches, living it day in and day out. So sit back as I ask the real experts, moms like you, all the advice you asked for, and some you didn't. This is Neighborhood Twin Mom. Welcome to the neighborhood. I have Becca Robbins, who is my second cousin's wife. And I always tell people that the twins don't run in my family, which they don't. I just happen to have a lot of family. So some of us do have twins, but Becca comes from a small family and her husband comes from a big family and now they're growing their family. Do you want to introduce yourself a little bit, Becca?
I grew up in a small town, like a small Southern town. I'm from south of Nashville, Tennessee, and I met my husband at BYU, but we were friends for like, I don't know, 5 years before. I actually told him about a month before we started dating that I told my mother-in-law, my future mother-in-law, that the thought of kissing my husband was so gross to be like kissing my brother. And then we ended up getting married. So my husband's the oldest of 12. I'm the youngest of 4. So by his standards, that's a small family. Where I grew up, that was a normal sized large family is how I like to put it. But yeah, we met at BYU and got married. Went to dental school in Utah and then lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma for 6 years. And then now we're in Colorado. I'm trying to fix that. Like, that's so hard for me. Colorado. And we've been here since last June, so almost a year. And we've got, seven kids. Eli, who will be 13 soon. Then Lucy, who is going to be 11 soon. And then Eleanor, who is almost 9. And then Henry and Owen, who are my twins, and they just turned 7. And then Cecilia, who is 3.5, and Everett, who is 1.
And but you didn't want to have a big family, right? Or at least that's not what
I
you
did
had.
Not plan. I mean, I was thinking like 4. I mean, so big by today's standards, I think, but I never would have thought I would have 7 kids. I would have thought you were nutso if you'd been like, yeah, you're going to have 7 kids. Just because, I mean, 7 kids is a lot. You're super outnumbered. My husband grew up the oldest of big family. So, I mean, he's used to it. And I think when you're the oldest of a big family, you become used to, he definitely wasn't treated like a parent. It wasn't like one of those weird situations where the parents parentify the oldest.
Right.
But he did pitch in a lot. He helped a lot and, you know, did a lot of diapers whenever he was around, just because he was that type of brother. So, you know, I had a husband who was just already given to be helpful and supportive. And I think that made it easier for me to have a bigger family, you know, whenever you have a partner.
So there are spontaneous twins.
Yes.
How did you find out you were pregnant with twins? How far along were you?
So I knew it was weird from the beginning because I started showing at like 5 weeks. I remember I went to Lake Powell with my husband's family and all of his siblings. And also his aunt and her family came and she has a set of twins. But at the time, I think the bunnies were like 14, 15. So they were teenagers and they were monodye twins. And I was pregnant and I was already showing. And I was like, I'm wearing freaking spandex or whatever this is. Everybody can tell I'm pregnant. And so I just told everybody and I felt stupid because I was so early along, but I was like, they know, like it's, and they're going to think I'm hiding a, like a second trimester pregnancy. But I mentioned it. And then I just started talking to his aunt on that same trip. I kept asking her questions about her twins. Cause I just had this, like, I just had this feeling in my head. I was like, I'm crazy for thinking I'm having twins. There's no reason, but I look so pregnant already. I mean, it was my fourth pregnancy, but it was like, I had a stomach. So that next week after we got back, I had my first doctor's appointment and my OBGYN just, she did a little ultrasound because I'm like, I'm huge. Like, I don't know what is going on here. I know exactly how far along I am. I'm just huge. And she's like, well, let's just take a peek. And she showed me and I saw it immediately, like the two little gummy bear blobs. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I just remember telling her, saying to her over and over again, you're kidding me, right? You're kidding me. You're kidding me. Cause I just was not prepared for that. But yeah, it was twins. And I mean, I was really overwhelmed, but it wasn't like, it was exciting overwhelm. I mean, I feel like most twin moms have two reactions. You're either really upset or you're like excited. Both responses are overwhelmed responses.
Right.
But I was more excited. The pregnancy itself was fairly, I hate saying this, but easy for the most part physically on me. I delivered 35 weeks.
Why do you hate saying it was easy?
Because so many twin moms are like crying at the end because they're so uncomfortable. And I feel bad for being like, oh, it was a breeze, which it wasn't easy, easy. I remember it being so uncomfortable, but I never got to the point where I like couldn't handle being pregnant anymore. I delivered at 35 weeks because of sudden onset preeclampsia, which ended up being a good thing. And then no NICU time beyond, they required like, I think a few hours of observation because of the gestation. And yeah, they let me take them home and that was that. I mean, it was, for me, it was an easy pregnancy in ways.
I think that's great. I think people need to know that it doesn't have to be miserable and hard. Like it can be easy. But so you had a very, this word I heard the other day on a different mom podcast, precipitous labor with, was it Lucy?
Oh yeah.
Was Lucy born in the elevator?
Well, Lucy was born in an elevator. Like it was like a 2-3 hour long beginning to end. We had moved an hour away from my, or probably 45 minutes away from the hospital where I was supposed to live. We moved because of dental school. And I was like 34 weeks. I was like, I'm too late to switch. I'm just going to stick with where we're going. And I remember calling my mom. She was at my sister's house. She came over to watch the kids because I was like, I need to go to the hospital. And we got in the freeway, which was like our house was right off the interstate right then. I was like, I looked at Brandon. My husband was like, I need to push. He was like, no, you don't. I was like, no, I need to push. And in my head at the time, I was like, there's no way I'm going to make this 40 minutes down the road. There's no way. And I was planning my head. I mean, we were so poor at the time because the dental school is like, we can't afford to detail this car. Like this baby's going to come in the car. I can't afford that. Pull over. And I'm going to sit on the side of the freeway and have a baby. But thankfully we passed American Fork Hospital right in time. And
you went to a shorter, the closer hospital, not the further.
Yeah, we went to a closer hospital. Yeah, sorry. I should have specified that. He pulled in the little roundabout by the hospital and I jumped out without my shoes and got in the elevator and ripped off my pants and had a baby.
Was he in the elevator with you though, right?
He made it right in time. There was a like the little old cleaning lady because it's a small hospital. So it wasn't fully staffed. It was a Sunday night. Like there wasn't an OBGYN currently in the hospital when I went there. So a little lady, she insisted I got in a wheelchair before I got on the elevator. I was like, I don't have time for this. Like, just give me, I need a bed. I need a doctor. Cause like, this is very stressful. So I, she held the door open for my husband. Otherwise I would have been like, see you later. Like,
yeah,
I don't have time for this until he saw her crowning in the elevator. He thought I was just being like
dramatic.
Yeah. I hate to say dramatic cause it sounds like he's insensitive, but I think he just thought I was caught up in like the labor and
With the twins, was the labor, did you do things differently because of that?
So yes and no. My second, my child after Lucy also was precipitous labor, but my husband made me go to the hospital at times. So I made it with 20 minutes to spare. But so my OB-GYN definitely had that on her radar. But with the twins, she just kind of told me, okay, A, you're not allowed to go anywhere once, like within a certain distance from either our hospital or like another big hospital with a NICU. Like from, I can't remember, it was like probably once I reached my third trimester, she was like, no, you need to be close by a hospital. Like, cause if with mono dye twins, I mean, it's not as serious as like Momo. It's still, things could go wrong with like the cords and all that stuff. And so she just told me to stick by, and we planned like a tentative induction date. Cause I mean, I had gone natural with my previous two pregnancies, but I kind of had given it up and realized, like, I just had a feeling I needed to have an epidural this time. And I needed to like, just put it all in the hands of the doctor, how the doctor was confident in himself to do it. And I'm glad I did, because we did have a tentative induction date, but then I went to my 35-week appointment and my blood pressure, which is always super low, for some reason was just at the tippy top of normal. Like it was high for me. I can't remember what it was, but it wasn't quite full blown preeclampsia high, but it was high. And so she sent me home with like a 24-hour, the urine catch where you pee into the thing and then they test your proteins. And I went the next morning to my appointment and she was like, just to drop off like the jug of pee, it's like a milk jug. And she was like, you know, I just keep getting this feeling that you just need to stay and have the babies today. And I was like, wait, I hadn't even packed. Like I hadn't done anything. And so she was like, yeah, I just want you to go upstairs to L&D and we're just going to induce you. I just get a feeling you need to have the babies. And so I called my husband and he had to pack for me, which was a nightmare. Like it was very interesting, the things I found in my bags. He did his best. And then once I had my boys, my placenta, there were white spots all over it,
yeah,
particularly on my baby B's part of the placenta. And we didn't realize how small his portion of the placenta was. Like there was some definite unequal sharing. And after I had them, she looked at that. She was like, you know, if we had waited another 2 weeks, she said, with the way your placenta looks right now, because I mean, they can't really tell on an ultrasound what placenta looks like. She's like, I don't think your babies would have made it. Like, I think that it would have just failed on you. And I know that sounds dramatic, but having seen it myself, yeah, it was not in good shape. And what's funny about that is my whole pregnancy before had been just easy breezy for the most part. Like as far as my health goes, I mean, there were some other complications with one of the babies, but nothing as far that would have given me any hint that the placenta was struggling or any life-threatening problems.
So how do the kids, the twins are 4 and 5 out of 7 kids. How do they fit into your family? Do you treat the twins differently than the other ones? Do you group them together and share rooms, or are they just like any of the other kids?
They've always shared a bed for the most part. I mean, they told us not to put them in the same crib in the beginning, but they would not sleep apart. I think they were just so used to each other. And I tried to put them apart, like the pediatrician asked, but like they would not sleep. And I was like, I can't. Like when you already have 3 other kids and you're trying to juggle 2 newborns, I just couldn't. And my husband was in dental school. It's not like he was fully available to do night shift. Plus I was nursing. So it's like, what are you going to do anyway? Like stand there and basically be annoying is how it feels at 2 a.m. I remember being like, no, they don't want me to do this, but I did it anyway. And honestly, it was the right decision for me. I don't regret it at all. And then we separated them a little bit, but then ended up putting back together once they stopped, like the rolling on each other became less of a threat. Like we separated them like 6 months or 5 months, but they've always shared a bed and they've always shared clothes, like all their clothes. I was with the type of twin mom who didn't want to dress them identical. Like I was like, no, they're 2 unique people. Like they don't need to be the same in every single way. And while I still felt that way, I learned earlier on that it was kind of easier to dress them the same because they fought over shirts. Like they'd be like, no, I want that shirt. Like I want the dinosaur shirt. Like I want the dinosaur shirt with the flippy sequins on it, but he has it. Like it just makes my life easier. Like you're just going to wear the same thing. But I've always tried to treat them as separate people because they are very separate people. Like their personalities are very different. So they just, have different strengths, different weaknesses. And I don't think it's necessarily healthy for them to treat them as two lumped up individuals, like a unit always, but that doesn't mean it doesn't always happen.
So do you have the twins in the same school class?
I do right now, but that's mainly because of COVID. COVID kind of made things more difficult as far as that goes. Cause I'd always thought, well, so in our last school system, they were in Chinese immersion. So we kind of didn't have a choice. So they were together and I thought, well, once we get to first grade, there's two Chinese immersion classes, we'll separate them because I want them to make their own friends, not become dependent upon each other. And also like, it drives me crazy, but I know teachers try, but my experience is they always are like, well, Henry does this really great, but it's so weird because Owen does this not so great. Or like, there's this constant comparison, even though I think they try not to. So this year they're still together because of COVID procedures. They just said it was easier with exposure.
Yeah.
But next year I told the teachers they need to be separate. like they do pretty well, but they're kind of like an old married couple. They really love each other, but at the same time, like they drive each other insane. Like they can't leave the other one alone. Like they manage each other's business all the time. Like he's not doing what he's supposed to do. And it drives me crazy. And I think they would be like less sick of each other if they weren't together all the time. I mean, I love my husband, but I get sick of him when he's home. Like the beginning of the pandemic, he was home for like 2 months straight. And I was like, you gotta go to work. Like, I love you. But like, I need to like have, we need space.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Then we'll enjoy each other more when we're together.
So you have a lot of kids, big family. How do you advocate for your kids? Because some of your kids have some health needs that you've really advocated for. So how have you been able to like give your kids individual attention that they need and advocate for them?
Well, that's a hard one because no one likes to annoy other people or to sound like you're being overly, like you're trying to like diagnose your child, because doctors sometimes don't like that, having married into a medical family. Like, I know how doctors feel when people show up with WebMD pages printed off from the internet. It can be frustrating sometimes. So my baby B, Owen, when I was pregnant with him, I had my 20-week anatomy scan, whatever. And I knew, I could tell something was wrong because it kept going over his spine over and over and over again. And she kept measuring and remeasuring and measuring, and like, I've had enough ultrasounds in my life that I was like, okay, this is like, something's not normal here. And the doctor came in and he was like, well, you know, we noticed his spine, there's some problems. Some of the vertebrae aren't formed correctly and his spine is crooked. So they are like, he has a kidney that's pelvic, meaning it was a little small and too low is what they said. And whenever we see all these things together, what can happen is because they all certain body parts all develop in a fetus at the same time, like at 6 weeks gestation, your heart, your lungs, your kidneys, your spine, all that starts developing. And they said, if we're seeing problems with two of these things, then there's a very high likelihood that there are problems with other organs as well. And what they call it is the Vactoral Association, which is honestly, if you Google it, it's very upsetting. it can affect like the esophageal opening, the anus, digits cannot be fully formed, or arms can be too short. It's a whole host of problems that have the potential to be there. And he has what's called congenital scoliosis, which means the spine didn't form correctly. He has hemivertebrae, which means that the vertebrae are shaped more like wedges in spots, as opposed to like, I don't know, like kind of a rectangle, if that makes sense. If a vertebrae is shaped like a pie wedge, then it can skew the whole spine off. You know, you start Googling and it can be like, Quasimodo comes up, like all these really disturbing images and things that go hand in hand with that. And so, and they told me, they're like, because a lot of this involves soft tissue, we won't really know until he's born. We can't really see a lot of it. And I remember when he was born, the first thing, you know, most parents are just like overjoyed that their child was born. But the first thing out of my mouth was, does he look okay? Is he okay? He was perfect. He was tiny. He was 4 pounds, 11 ounces. So he was small. but he was perfect. We took him to the doctor, the pediatrician. The pediatrician was like, oh, he looks fine. We're fine from here. You know, like, I don't think we really need to rush to see any doctors or anything. He looks like everything's good. But I was like, no, we need to go see. That's not what the MFMs, maternal fetal medicine doctors, that's not what they said. Like, I think we need to, why don't we just do it anyway? And I remember feeling so stupid for being pushy about it, because you're not the doctor. Like, I didn't go to medical school, and you feel like you're just being hypersensitive maybe. But he was like, fine, sure. I guess if you really want to, we can do that. And I went to Primary Children's to see an orthopedic surgeon there for children. And we just so happened to be in an area where one of the best orthopedic surgeons for congenital scoliosis lives in the country. We were really blessed in that way. He was like, no, you need to come. He's like, your pediatrician, as well-intended as he was, like, he wasn't exactly right. No, he needs to be scanned for like every 6 months for the little bit. Like, we need to do like x-rays. And then after that, once a year, like, cause it can aggress, it can be aggressive, the curvature, and it can be really damaging, especially in the first few years of life and puberty. And if they don't catch it in like the curvature in time, you know, there's casting that they have to do where they basically put a cast on the torso to keep the curvature in space, in place, until they can like buy time for surgery. And all these, like, it was very, very overwhelming for someone who has had, who had before very typical births and babies. But I, you know, I don't regret being pushy about going to see that doctor, because I mean, he's 7 now and we still have to go back, but thankfully we're at a point where we only have to go every other year instead of every year, because your growth just isn't as accelerated at this point in time. You know, and he's had all the weird things. He looks like this perfect little boy. I mean, he's on the smaller side. He's like 5th percentile, but he gets these horrible migraines all the time where he spends 24 hours throwing up in the dark. And I've had to push to go see neurologists for that. And finally, we actually just saw a neurologist 7 weeks ago. And it's been a miracle to me, because he hasn't had a migraine in 7 weeks since the neurologist told me, you know, let's try these new meds and we'll get that going for him. And lo and behold, it worked, you know, but I've had to push a lot to see doctors, and I respect the doctors that I've had to do the pushing with, because I think they're doing their best. But sometimes, like, doctors don't always know everything. And I'm trying to be respectful about that, because I really respect these medical professionals. Even like the same child was severely tongue-tied. It was all the way to the tip of his tongue, where his tongue was down, you know, attached to the bottom of his mouth. And my father-in-law, who I love and I respect a lot, he's an ear, nose, throat doctor. He's like, oh no, it should be fine. Like, you know, if he's able to eat, don't worry about it. It's not a problem. But he wasn't gaining weight. He didn't gain weight for like a few, like 2 months, which is a big deal on a newborn. And he was failure to thrive and all these things. And finally, like, I was like, I think we need to get this clipped. Like, even though he was nursing at the time, I was like, even though he seems to be fed, like, and to be getting full, I think this needs to get clipped. And my husband was like, fine, yeah, sure, you know, go ahead. And we got it clipped, and he started gaining weight, and we had no more problems with failure to thrive. And so, I mean, I guess what it boils down to is really listening to your own instincts as a parent and as a mother, and not being afraid to say, no, I think that this is the right thing to do, because it's not going to hurt anything if we just check. Like, I will regret not checking more than I will regret being overly cautious. That's at least my feelings. It's hard, because you do feel kind of ridiculous at moments, but I mean, it's always paid off for me in the long run.
Yeah. What do you do for yourself? You have a big family, you manage a household, you're a stay-at-home mom. How are you able to fill up your cup?
I go out by myself a lot. And I guess you could say I'm running errands, but I like to go out and just do stuff. Like, just, I'll go to the grocery store, but then do other things on my own. Like, I love to just, as stupid as this sounds, walk through Target and just like see what's there. And I'm crazy, but I'll put things in my cart and then I'll just put it up. Like, it makes me feel like I'm like wishful shopping, but then be like, I don't really need this. But I
fill your whole cart up and then go put it all back away.
I totally do. But I like to read. I read a lot. Like I read usually probably 2 to 3 books a week. I love podcasts. I love true crime, like a lot of moms, I think. Like that's
30-year-old moms, yeah.
Yep, millennial moms. That's what we do. We listen to podcasts about murder. It helps me feel prepared. Like, what if? Like now I know what to do if my sister goes missing. Like I know how to have a, yeah. I know how long until I can contact the cops, all the stuff. But no, I love podcasts and I don't like to run, but I do run because it's good for my mental health. You know, I've learned that I need to just go outside and be outside. I love my children, but as long as I have time away from them, I'm a much better, happier mom.
Do you have any advice for other twin moms?
That's a big question. One of the big ones would be just don't compare them. It's very easy to want to compare. I mean, my boys are very different academically. One of them is much stronger with their academics than the other. One of them's probably more athletically motivated, I would say. I wouldn't say necessarily more athletic, but just more competitive with athletics, if that makes sense. He has more of the mental game as far as that goes. They're two different human beings. And you just kind of have to let go all of your expectations because it's never going to be what you expect it to be, and learn to laugh about it when they do things that are so frustrating. You just want to be ragey about it because my twins have caused, I say that they aren't twice as much trouble or they don't cause twice as much damage as two children. As one child, they cause like quadruple the messes and damage as one child. Yeah. Like I don't know. There's like a synergy there. And my boys at least can destroy something far faster than any of my singletons could.
I always say two minds are better than one. And yeah. Four hands are faster than two.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, I'll never forget when they were like two, I was just in the bathroom, going to the bathroom or something. And I came out and one of them had gotten a Costco sized Dawn dish detergent. And the other one had Barkeeper's Friend. And the one with the Dawn just had squeezed it out all over the wood and carpet. And the one with the Barkeeper's Friend was just shaking his up in the air. So I had to clean up like an abrasive and like this soap and all on the hardwood. And I'd been gone for like, I mean, I'd gone to the bathroom, not like a dad bathroom visit either, like a mom bathroom visit. They're my only children to have smeared poop like all across the house or to escaped out screened windows and gotten lost streets over. I mean, they just, yeah, you just have to learn to laugh about it. Like there's no other way to save your sanity than to laugh about it and write about it later.
Yes.
So you can talk about it at their wedding or whenever it's time for you to be in an old people's home, say, nope, you owe me. they're fun.
They are fun. All right. Well, thank you so much for this interview, Becca.
No problem.
Thanks for hanging out with me today. If you want to hang out some more, you can follow me on Instagram at @neighborhoodtwinmom. If you want more info on what we talked about in this episode or a transcription of the audio, head to neighborhoodtwinmom.com. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star rating and review. This helps other people be able to find the podcast. Music for this episode was composed by Cameron Norby. Find more of his work on YouTube.
Everett, who is 1 in 4 weeks. Sorry.
Hello.
He's supposed to be napping, but he was not cooperating.